My name is Nwabogo Enwerem, but most people call me Ogo. I am a Nigerian and has made Ireland my home for the past 15 years. I am a wife, a mother of five, a writer, a journalist, and a radio presenter. I am also a lawyer from Nigeria, often called a mediator and communication strategist. But for me, I think I'm just me, a woman who would like to share stories of people that have been affected by conflicts, and also look for ways to resolve this conflict and help the people rebuild their lives. So, in March 2017, with the support of Simon Kumba's Media Fund, I traveled to Nigeria, a sub-Saharan part of Africa, to do a photographic and radio documentary on the lives of the people affected by Boko Haram and Fulani herdsmen insurgencies in the northern part of Nigeria. I wanted to create an awareness around the conflict, its effects, and how the people are coping post the attack. For instance, in 2014, a community called Chibok in Borno State, which is also in the northern part of Nigeria, was attacked by Boko Haram, an Islamic terrorist group, who then abducted 276 girls from their secondary school. This story got my attention and I began to ask questions. And all those questions brought about this documentary that I'd like you to listen to today, which is titled Rebuilding a New Life, a story of internally displaced persons. I wanted to see and to hear how these attacks came about and what the people are doing post the attack. I was opportune to visit some of the camps where the internally displaced persons are living. The camps I visited were in Lagos State, Kaduna State, Nasarawa State, and Abuja, the Federal Capital Territory of Nigeria. My first stop was Lagos State. You can't fly straight to Nigeria from Ireland, so I had to do a stopover at Amsterdam. I got to Amsterdam around 9:05 and had to wait for the flight. And then we boarded for Nigeria at about 1:20 and got to Lagos International Airport, which is called Molitara Mohammed International Airport, for 8:05 on the same day. By the time we finished coming out of the plane, passing through the immigration, it was already 9:50. And then after that, we had to wait for the luggage. And when I finally came out of the airport, it was 12 midnight. I got a nice welcome gift, or should I say party, from the Nigerian mosquitoes, who for some reason knew I hadn't been to Nigeria in a while. So the next day, which was Friday, I found myself drained, jet-lagged, and tired from all the waiting. But the show must go on. So I had to get on with all the phone calls and all the meetings for the day. And it was agreed that the first camp, which was the only camp in Lagos State, was located in Elegushi Ghetto in Lekki on Lagos Island. I came into Elegushi around 10 on Monday. They were giving a talk on water hygiene and also assessing them for those of them that were giving microfinance. So on that day, I met with some of the representatives of Grooming Center and the executive of CESO Africa, who was actually the person that organized these meetings for me with these women.
How are you?
How are you?
Yeah, look at you. Look.
Hi, honey.
Hello.
Oh, she's very agile. How old?
Oh,
How old is she now? 3 months?
No,
no, she's
not finished 2 months. Not 2 months yet. February when? When did we have her? February 3rd.
You already have your ears pierced.
Yes, now. They do it sharply so she can be. Look at it. She's very interested in you.
Oh my God. After the pleasantries, I had to ask the women their names individually and I had to speak their language, which is Hausa. So Mei Sunenki means what is your name?
Mei Sunenki.
Mei Sunenki.
Fatima.
Mei Sunenki.
Ajia Karo.
Mei Sunenki.
Fati Abocha.
Mei Sunenki.
Aisha Boni.
Mei Sunenki. Mei Sunenki.
Veronica Daniel.
Mei Sunenki.
After the introduction, the women said to me that they all live together and they are happy living together, and they expressed this joy by singing the song. The importance of music cannot be overemphasized in the Nigerian culture. Most times we use music to express so many things, like even to advise children. If someone dies, we tend to play a particular kind of music. If we're happy, we tend to sing a particular kind of song. If the people are celebrating, they tend to sing a particular kind of song. The women here are singing the songs just to express how important it is for them to live together and be at peace with one another. In the IDP camp in Lagos at Elegushi Ghetto, two women were willing to share their stories with me, Rejoice and Veronica. The first lady I spoke to at Elegushi was Rejoice, who was originally from Borno State but living in Mubi in Adamawa State as a result of being born in Mubi. She said on the day Boko Haram attacked her community, it all started as a rumor. They heard that Boko Haram was coming, and that before they knew what was happening, early that morning, they started hearing gunshots. Unfortunately, her husband was not home as he had gone off for business, and she was left only with her baby. She then fled with her baby from her community, and her baby was so distressed from the gunshots and the noise that she kept screaming. She said they fled to a nearby village called Lamudu, and then from there they fled to another village called Goja. That she first found herself somewhere near Cameroon. She didn't even know where she was going to, but she just followed everybody that was running. That at that point she didn't know what she was doing, she didn't know where she was going to. Then while they were fleeing, one of the women said she wanted to feed her baby, that she was tired, she needed to sit down to feed the baby. And while the woman sat down to feed the baby, the woman gave up, she died. And they didn't know what to do. They had to take the woman's baby and then leave the woman there. They got to another place and a pregnant woman said she was tired and she needed to rest, only for it to happen that she was in labor. And she gave birth to her baby there, but the baby had already died in her womb. But luckily, her family was there and they tied the baby in a nylon bag because there was no place to bury the baby as the floors were full of rocks. And then they helped the woman and they ran. So Rejoice said when she found herself in Goja, she met somebody that she knew, and with their support, they helped her relocate her family back in Yola. And then while she was in Yola, she was able to contact her husband who at that time had fled to Lagos. And when you hear the stories, you think that maybe it was days. Some of them were weeks and months. The husband now made arrangements for her and her baby to come to Lagos.
So as people just talk that early morning, before we go, say we go just find our way to run, we don't already enter, meet us inside. Mm-hmm. So they start to shoot gun up and down. So now I carry my baby, that piece. Mm-hmm. So she was even crying as the gun was shooting, everywhere was noisy, like that. So I just carry her, we just ran away. As we just run, now we can run to that Cameroon side. Mm-hmm. So as we run to that Cameroon side, now we go in there. Before we reach that Cameroon side, we sleep in on one village like this, mm-hmm. where they used to call the name of the place Lamurde. We go sleep for there. As we go sleep for there, early morning, now we start to waka. Me, I don't even know road, we just they follow people. And there is even a woman where we dey waka together. She said, ah, madam, me, I don't tire. Me, I want rest for here because the road was full of stones and you not see some sand like this. They're all now stones. The road was not straight, smooth, and it hills. It's a hill. You go climb hill like this. Come, go up, come down, go up. So she said she's tired. She wants to rest more. As she just rest more, now she carry her baby like this. She want breastfeed the baby. Now she just give up there. She died. And me, I don't know what I'm going to do. I was even confused. Now I call some people. Now they come gather. As they come gather, now because the people will know her. Yeah. So now I left her. I start to go. So as I start to go again, I still meet one woman again. She's pregnant. We dey work out together, no food, no water, nothing. 1 naira we not get for ourselves. Where we go say we go see something by chop. Like this, we just dey suffer dey go. Now that woman tell me say, ah, madam, my belly they pay me. Now that woman come born for me. But the pikin where she born don't die. But she dey alive. So now they come find nylon. They put that small baby inside because the place you cannot dig it because it's stone there. It's like gravel like this. You will not see sand like this for that road, that Cameroon road. So Naomi, her people again come meet her there. They come carry her for bike go. Now only me remain. Naomi, I trek. Sit up and reach one village where they call Foja. So from that village now I come meet one man where me I know him. Now you cook, ma can't help me. Find my way to Yola, come meet my parents. Because everybody for our house, everybody don't depart. One, now everybody don't, because we get house for our other Yola. Mm-hmm. So now I come find my way for there. Now I come meet my parents for that Yola.
So how did you find yourself in Lagos?
In Lagos, yeah. So as I just stay, now I can't call my husband. Because that time my husband say want go buy something for our village. Now everybody calls scatter. Mm-hmm. Now he can't tell me, say, ah, you don't try over, all me see don't reach Lagos. I say, okay, what about me and your baby? How are we going to do? He say, he's going to try and see what he can do. Mm-hmm. Now he come, because that time when he come, he never start to work. So now he come borrow money from his friends. Now he come send for us. Now we cook my fine our way. Come meet him for this moment.
Veronica and her family fled from Fulani herdsmen insurgencies in Karal Jamal local government in Kafanchan of Kaduna State. She narrated her story as to how her community was set on fire after the announcement on national TV that Jonathan Goodluck, a southerner, had won the presidential election in 2011.
My name is Veronica.
So Veronica, you were from Kaduna?
Yes.
And you had to leave your place in Kaduna?
Yes.
Which part of Kaduna?
From Kaura Jamal local government, Kafanchan.
So do you have family here?
It's only me and my husband with my children that run 18 April, that is 2011. We run from the riot, 5 minutes to 10 in the night. Immediately then tell the result. Everywhere just born with fire.
Uh-huh.
Everywhere just born with fire. That is 18 April.
Uh-huh.
So we just run from there.
Uh-huh.
So that is how we start managing our life from this time.
Okay.
So I thank God for the life of my husband, my children, for the life of the person that directed us to come here, but now the person is died.
Uh-huh.
So we still pray for him so that the Almighty God.
You have to leave your house, your property, everything in Kafancha.
Yes.
Okay.
We leave everything still up to now. My family still dead there. Even yesterday, they even call us for phone. Say Fulani people, then they pursue them. They need place to come and meet us here. So.
And do you live inside the settlement?
Yes, this is my house. My house is living down there.
But when you were living in Kaduna, you had a better house, I presume.
I have better house. My husband is a good wholesaler.
Mm-hmm.
So they burn everything. We have to run and live there.
After I finished with the women at the IDP camp in Elegushi, I promised them that I'll keep them in mind and see ways I can help them, and also that I'd like to come back someday and see that their lives are better and they've been relocated to better facilities. Nnamdi Azikiwe International Airport, Abuja, was closed for renovation when I arrived Nigeria, and I had to fly from Lagos to Kaduna, as Kaduna Airport was the closest one to Abuja. But while I was investigating, people were saying to me, oh, Kaduna is not safe for you. You shouldn't go to Kaduna. And not just the people in Nigeria. Department of Foreign Affairs here had marked Kaduna a red zone for Irish nationals traveling to Nigeria. I left Lagos for Kaduna around 7 a.m. and got to Kaduna about 8:15. I then had to travel to Kafanchan, which was 3 hours 39 minutes, because for me, I felt that since Kaduna was on my way to Abuja, I might as well go into Kafanchan to see what had happened. Because shortly before I arrived in Nigeria, some communities in Kafanchan were attacked by Fulani headsmen, and I wanted to see for myself what had happened to the people. There was only one IDP camp in Kafanchan, and this was located in a primary school in Takao. Most of the people, as I went through the communities, were still living in their burnt dwellings and had sent off their children to maybe stay with relatives in safer communities in Abuja, in Nasarawa, and in some areas in Kaduna as well. As I walked through this community, I could feel the tension and the fear in Goska, in Bakin Kogi, in Takawa, in Gidinwaya. I listened to the stories of the people, took pictures, and met a 22-year-old widow, an orphan, whose husband was killed by Fulani headsmen. Godie had also lost a son previously and is now homeless with two of her surviving children, a 10-year-old boy and a 3.5-year-old daughter. Her story broke my heart. She got married at 11 years and gave birth to her first child at 12. She could not speak any form of English, and I had to use an interpreter as she narrated her ordeal.
Does
she have children?
She
has 3 kids.
Mm-hmm.
One lets, 2 are with her.
One is dead.
Is dead, yeah.
2 are with her.
Yeah.
How old is she?
Okay. She couldn't give
her.
22 years.
22 years. And her husband is dead?
Dead, yeah. During the crisis.
Okay. Okay, can you just ask her what happened?
When I was a woman, see, put her in the sugar for so
called
it. The sugar for so called it. Same moon I get up, Mufara good, same good boy at shower. Send a good yachin, quash her, I don't good in the Kagura, send a good in the Kagura.
What she's saying is that on the good day, the Fulani came to the where they are living, and the husband asked them to run away. They should take the kids. So after they run away with the kids, later on, she called the husband at the next day. The Fulani people took the phone, and she recognized the voice of a Fulani man. He asked the man that, where's my husband? The Fulani says that he has killed the man. So, and after 3 days, they found the corpse somewhere. And since she could be able to recognize the Fulani voice, she asked the man, Alaji, are you the one that killed my husband? She said, yeah. The Fulani man said, yes, that he's the one. So after 3 days, they found the corpse. So when they get the corpse, after 2 days again, they found the husband brother somewhere that they killed. After some days, before they could be able to recover the dead body again somewhere at the river. So, but now she left with the three. She has 3 kids before, but she left with 2 now. So, but now they are not staying in the house because the house has been bombed after some days. So they are just managing themselves here at the IDP camp, trying to survive. No, it's very far.
A man shared his story with me. He lost his elder brother and some other extended family members. Their houses were burnt. Their food banks were burnt. And years of sentimental properties destroyed by fire set by the Fulani herdsmen. He told me how he's now left to cater for his late brother's wife and children. He said that the children cannot go to school because the Fulani herdsmen are still attacking their community. And for them to go to church, they had to take military men for security reasons. You know, it got me as I looked at this small community and I said to them, why do they attack you people? What do they want? And they said to me, our land is rich and fertile. They want our land. And they also want to use it for grazing for their cattle. You know, as I walked through the community, I saw armored tanks packed in very strategic places. I left Kaduna drained, sad, disturbed, with a heavy burden for the people. So many questions went through my head. I saw the meaning of sorrow. I saw poverty. I saw despair. I saw brokenness. But I tell you, in the midst of it all, I saw hope. Hope in a hopeless situation. Hope to keep living. Hope for change. Hope in God. Hope that it will be better. As I traveled to Abuja, which was another 3 hours, 7 minutes. I just kept thinking, reflecting, wishing, and hoping that there was something I could do to make these lives better. Mind you, we had to leave Kaduna before 7 p.m. on that day because of safety and security issues as well. So we left Kaduna shortly, maybe a couple of minutes before 7, and arrived Abuja the same day, about some minutes past 10, with mixed feelings and a bit scared of what I might see in Nasarawa. I went to Nasarawa State the next day after I left Kaduna State. And in Nasarawa is just after Abuja, like a few minutes from Abuja. This is a journey of about 30 minutes. But because of the bad roads, it took about 1 hour 45 minutes. And when we got to Nasarawa, we couldn't look at the camp, so we had to wait for the camp commandant to come and get us. And it took him about 20 to 30 minutes to locate where we were. When we then met him, it was another 40 minutes drive to the camp. So even coming to this camp, my initial impression was like it was better than all the other camps I had been to. It looked more like a community than a camp. And after I spoke to them, I realized that they don't call it an IDP camp, but rather they call it an interfaith community. So in this camp, I spoke to Bulus, who wasn't particularly affected by Boko Haram himself, but had his wife, his child, and his family in Borno when Boko Haram attacked his community. And then I spoke to some of the women and the men that were willing to share their stories with me. Most women in Nasarawa were not willing to share their stories, but I had the vice chairman for the camp telling me the stories of these women.
Bulus Gerba, the camp coordinator of Burku Interfaith IDP's camp, Nasarawa. I can say I've been affected by the activities of the insurgents in the northeastern part of the country. Though I wasn't there physically when they attacked my community, but I was traumatized because 100% of my people are at home when this thing happened. I was on call with my mom. I was in Lagos then. She called and was telling me that the Boko Haram have attacked the community. And the next thing I heard was gunshots from the background. And in a couple of minutes, there was total silence. I couldn't contact my mom for 2 days. So I was terrified. I was forced to travel back to Adamawa State. I left Lagos. And in less than 48 hours, I was in Adamawa State. Went to the villages around looking for my mom. And lucky enough for me, someone told me that they've already fled the community and were on their way to Yola. So I caught up with them and we left to Yola. But before this, 3 times I slept in a bush prior to the last attack that they took over our community. I was home 3 times. The military guys asked us to run because these guys, the insurgents, could attack any moment. And you know, because of the story of what happened, so any rumor, people will act on it. So 3 times I spent a night in a bush before the final attack. So when I evacuated my mom to Yola and my other siblings, and as the eldest son, I was affected economically because I have to cater for them because they left home. They managed to escape with just the material, the cloth on themselves. So I have to cater for them, everything with my deaf brother, elder brother. For 3 months that they've been in Yola before the military took over the town, I've been trying for them, I've been providing for them. So they took over my community and that affected us physically, spiritually, because so many people thought we were not going back to our community because my hometown was the headquarters of the Boko Haram when they took over, because that was where the military, one army was telling me that had it been on the fourth day, they couldn't overcome the firepower of the Boko Haram, that the insurgent would have overcome the military and took over that community. But God helped them to overcome the firepower of the Boko Haram and they captured that community precisely in the month of November 2014. So I was able to visit home that same year, but December 28th. And you know, the aftermath of the attack was a serious one because everyone then was a suspect. You can't just move freely. So people managed to escape with the military guys. They escaped together.
After Bulus shared his own story with me, he then introduced me to the camp chairman and other members of the IDP camp, who then took me around. We're working and working with the chairman of the camp and the secretary. They're escorting me on this trip together. We're finally here at the women's settlement.
Now we're at the cross section where they have the widows, where they are staying. And then the chairman is just going to narrate a bit of the story. We have her and her daughter here.
So this woman that sitting, she's a wife of the pastor. Her husband is being killed by the Boko Haram. After they have killed her husband, they took the mattress, put under his dead body and burned both the house and the dead body inside the house. So this is her grandchildren that are living together with her. So after they have killed her husband, she ran away to Cameroon. From Cameroon, she came to Yola. From there, we took her, we brought her here.
So is this where they live?
Yeah.
So just this room?
Yes.
Yeah. So she's living here, there were two with her grandchildren.
Okay.
So this is the kitchen, this is the room that they are living inside.
So does she do any trading or anything? Or she just stays to take care of the children?
Yeah, she just stay in. If we have a help from some organization or individual, everything we are sharing together is with that we are surviving.
You've heard the stories of these women, of what happened to them. So now we're going to talk about how they've been managing themselves, how they've been managing to survive post the attack. So the first lady to speak was Rejoice, who told me that she sells granuts. She kind of fries them and then sells them to people. And it's from the sale of the granuts that she gets little money to pay for her child's nursery. She pays 2,000 naira, which is like €5 for the child. And then if she has to pay for medication, it's then 4,000 naira, which is about €10 for the child for a year. And from that money that she gets from the sale of the granuts, she uses it to buy little groceries and then manage herself. On the other hand, Veronica sells things according to season. So, for instance, if it's rainy season, she says that some things don't go, like the cold drinks that she does herself and sells, that it doesn't go during rainy season. So she tends to sell warmer food items like roast corn and pear. But during the hot season, she then sells those drinks. She calls it kunu, and one is called zobo. So kunu is made out of, I think, wheat and ginger. You know, it's just like yogurt. So that's what Veronica does. Godia, on the other hand, has a relative of hers that supports her. So she sells palm wine to people. And there's been a lot of concern regarding her in relation to exposure to some form of risk, actually, of abuse. But the people helping her, like, we can't tell her to stop because this is the only way she makes money to support herself and two children. The women in Nasarawa State actually have a more organized form of business. Some are being trained to be seamstresses. Some do petty trading in front of the camp. Some, with the support of their grandchildren, buy larger scales of granite, the same thing Rejoice does in Lagos, but this one, it's in a larger quantity, and then they tend to make more money from that. So the money they really make does not really go far, in the sense that they can't save anything from that. They just kind of use it to buy seasoning for their meals and then buy a little bit of grocery. Something I'd like to see for some of the women in Lagos, they are being microfinanced, and this is where they kind of have a business idea and then they have Grooming Center and Seso Africa support them, give them a little loan which they pay back between 3 to 6 months. Sometimes they give them like 20,000 naira, which is like 50 euro, or sometimes they give them 40,000 naira, which is like 100 euros, about 100 euros. The women go off with this money, do the business, and then come back, repay the loan, and then apply for a higher loan.
Eating food, taking care of the children. The little one, you say she has gone to school.
I'm frying small, small granite like this. At times, I will keep it at the front of my house. So now I can see one shop where they fry, they give them. Mm-hmm. So if they sell, they gain where I sit. Now for there, we'll go manage shop inside. Now there, we'll go manage. Pay for the school, because the school where my baby is going, a month is 2,000, nursing is 3,000, so the school is not cost like that. So now we just manage. Okay.
So now that you're here, how have you been surviving?
By January to April, I used to do kunu, zobo, pop-off. Mm-hmm. By May, June till August, September, I did roast corn with plantain. When the weather is raining like this, kunu and zobo doesn't move. It's only corn that move. Mm-hmm. So by next week, by God's grace, if I see little money, I will start roasting corn.
Okay.
So now they manage, eat there, find soap, omo, pay children's school fees. Thank God I have only 3 children.
Mm-hmm.
We are still managing. So that is how we survive.
So what have you been doing to help you?
Tapping palm wine, that give her palm wine to sell. But now they say that the pastor says that she should not sell palm wine because she's too young to sell palm wine. So that's why now she's just staying here, get a little food to give the children and stay here. So she don't even know what to do.
Godia's story was a very touchy and emotional one, and watching her share her story broke my heart. She currently sleeps in a primary school, and unfortunately, June of this year, rain fell and the roof of that primary school was blown off. So now they practically sleep in the forest. So that's how she survives. She survives by sleeping in the bush and selling palm wine at a local makeshift shack.
At the end of the day, after we finished at Elegoshi Beach in Lekki, I was talking to the director for Seso Africa, and she was kind of giving me a feedback about the women and how they've helped themselves and redeveloped and running effective businesses. And one that struck us was Veronica, and this was what EA had to say about her.
Veronica does something
kunu
else.
Ball.
She took you to her place.
She took me to her place. Her. I saw.
She was one of the first to finish paying her loan. We found 50,000 naira to add for her. Because she now got a place on the beach for Christmas.
Okay.
To sell drinks for Christmas. So she now came that the market will be plenty then. So we should please find money for her. So someone donated 50k, so we gave that to her. She's paying back every week, I think, or something. But we didn't really treat it as a loan.
Mm-hmm.
We just take it as injection into her capital. She's very industrious. So she wants to build a duplex in 10 years.
Okay, so she has a goal.
She has a goal.
Talking about how the people are rebuilding, I also met an American lady from Indiana who was teaching the children in Guruku Interfaith Camp in Nasarawa. Not just the children, she was also training the women to become Montessori teachers.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
She visited our camp and she went to see what you are doing here.
Okay. So just be quiet and try not to disturb the children. You may come in.
Okay.
Which part of America are you from?
I'm from Indiana.
Indiana, okay.
Midwest.
Okay.
And how long have you been here?
At Gurku?
Yeah.
Since December.
Since December. And have you been here before? You just heard it from the news.
I've been in Nigeria, but not in Gurku.
Okay, you've been living in Nigeria?
Before.
Okay.
But it's been a few years. I was actually here in the 70s.
Okay.
From 72 to 82, all but 1 year, 9 years. And then I came back in, I visited in 1990, and I came back to live again in 2011.
Okay.
And I was here until 2014. And then I had, a woman was getting trained in the U.S., so I stayed there, and then I had to get a new visa, and that took some time. And so I just came back in December.
Wow, so this is just purely voluntary?
Yes, yes. This, I believe that Montessori is the most wonderful thing. The world doesn't know how wonderful it is. And I believe it helps to promote peace and understanding, good communication, good thinking skills.
And do you live in this community?
Yes, I live down across the road there. I'm getting a bit old, so yeah. This is my last little project, I think.
So your aim is for these children to have proper educational foundation.
And to grow up as friends.
Okay.
Some of our classes have both Muslim and Christian students in them.
Okay.
And we want them to grow up as friends. And to learn that it's okay to be different. We can still be friends. And we don't have to fight. We can talk. We talk about that a lot. No, hands are not for hitting. But we need to learn to communicate and solve our problems without hitting. There's other things we can do. We've got a little book about that.
And do you bring those books with you?
Yes, I do.
So when you're leaving, you will leave them with this?
Yes.
And have you been training other women to help you, to support you,
well,
to continue your work?
Well, the women are here, and we're hoping a couple can go to the U.S. and actually get a proper training. That's, I would like that before I leave, finally, to have some properly trained teachers here.
So how are you going to fund that?
I'm going to do some fundraising when I get to the States.
You have heard the stories of the internally displaced persons. What had happened to them as a result of Boko Haram and Fulani herdsmen insurgencies. You have heard what they are doing to rebuild and survive. Having been in these communities, I was told that they have challenges, and I noticed too, which were quite evident, and they are the need for adequate shelter and food.
This is one of the challenges that we are facing. And as you can see, the building now, we have 89 units of the houses, three rooms per family, suppose. So because we have about almost 200 families.
What I'm even thinking now is I just got to give me strength, their shelter. Because if federal government decides to do their roads, they are all finished. Shame. So when it's raining sometimes, I'll be my bed, I'm like, God, you mean these women like this? When it's raining, you've been here when it's raining. You just see the water will just be rising. You just be praying that it's not getting into your house. Because it'll just be rising. Probably do a round table on housing for them. Even if it's temporary housing, even if someone has land they're not developing for the next 3, 4, 5 years. Give us, let's try and see if we can build something decent. Even if it's temporary shelter, you know.
I've had great help from Reverend Ladi Peter Thompson, who is the International Coordinator of Macedonia Initiative and also the Chairperson for Non-Violence for African Development. He is also the Special Advisor on Conflict Resolution to the CAN President. CAN is Christian Association of Nigeria. So he's been into all this things that's been happening in the northern part of Nigeria for as far back as 20, 21 years. And he's been advising people to be aware and to be conscious of what's happening. That is not just in the north that is going to filter through. And the earlier they nip it at the bud, the better. But unfortunately, everybody felt, oh, it's not going to come here. But being in Nigeria now, I've been to Kafanchan, I've been to Nasarawa, I've been to Enugu, and even Lagos, and I've seen what
the situation is. So he's just going to round up this documentary for us by sharing his own experience, partly from all the work he's done and all the people he's been with. So, and in Nigeria, you can't just call somebody by name. You have to add title or say sir or something. So, good evening, sir. So, like you know, I've been doing this, following the women and the children that have been affected by the issue of Boko Haram and Fulani herdsmen. And with your help and your support and your advice, I was able to go to all those places. So could you just tell us briefly how you started this work and why, and then what the current situation is, especially with these women and the children, with regards to their education, women development, and empowerment?
Well, it's a very sad story if we look at it. I think we began to first catch sight of this thing in the late 1990s. And I particularly remember there was an explosion in Kaduna in the year 2002, actually. And when I went in, Kaduna is the key city in northern Nigeria. And I remember leaving Lagos with a letter of aid that we'd put together to help. What the papers reported was like 50 families who'd been affected by some so-called religious conflict. It was shocking to find out that the casualty figure was more like 2,000 people.
Okay.
And overall, after the second strike, we had like about 5,000, almost 6,000 dead. And at that time, the emphasis was on churches. There had been 600, and if I remember very well, 40-something churches had been burnt. So that sort of interested me, because the next month again, in Bauchi or some neighboring state, something similar had happened. Now, it piqued my interest, because as I moved around from field to field, I began to like concatenate. I began to join the dots. And I could see that there was a lot of intelligence behind what the people were calling religious conflicts. These were not religious conflicts. These were planned, well-executed Islamist attacks. But you see, the country was in denial. For a long time, we began to hold meetings, building consensus. I traveled around the country, in northern Nigeria especially, bringing together the stakeholders who are affected the most. But I can tell you that because it hadn't spread, it was not yet on the radar, we could see it, and we had studied it. We understood it for what it was. But most people in leadership just couldn't see it then. And the only painful thing is that so many deaths could have been averted if only people would understand that we need to think first before we do anything.
I left Nigeria a different person, a more sensitive human being. You know, when I went through the camp in Kuchingoro, in Abuja, which is the Federal Capital Territory of Nigeria, I couldn't believe that people could live in such condition. I spoke to one woman who told me that they promised them they were just going to be there for 6 months. They've been there for 4 years. I didn't last in that camp. I was bitter. I was angry. I can't even find the words to express how I felt. I couldn't believe this was Nigeria, my country. This determination came upon me, and I said, I'm going to finish this documentary. I'm going to tell the stories of these people. I'm going to be their voice. Their images were like a million pictures in my head. As I finish, I'll just like to say a big thank you. Thank you to the people of Goska, Takao, Gidinwaya, Bakin Kogi, Nkafanchan of Kaduna State. Thank you to the people in Interfaith Community Goroku. Thank you to the people in Kuchingoro IDP Camp in Abuja. Thank you to the women in Elegushi Ghetto in Lagos State. Thank you for sharing your stories with me, for allowing me follow you. Thank you for allowing me take the pictures. Thank you for allowing me sit in your midst. for giving me the permission to retell the stories. Thank you to the NGOs that helped me. Seso Africa, Iye Jonathan, a big thank you to you. To Laddie Thompson, who kind of arranged all my logistics with regards to security, a big thank you. To the people of Grooming Center, to Near FM Radio Station, for airing this documentary, for all your technical support, for opening your doors to this project, and for allowing me use your studio. Thank you to Finger Libraries, the host for the photographic exhibition. And thank you to you, Simon Combs, for believing in this vision and funding it. And to all you there that have listened, thank you for listening. And this is Nwabogo Enwerem, aka Ogo.